I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to 100% Hits Volume Pod. My name is Josh Earle, and in this podcast, we talk about the greatest compilation Australia's ever produced. And today, very special guest. You know him from Do Go On. You know him from Book Cheat. Please welcome into your hearts. It's Dave Warnicke, everyone. Yay!
Thank you so much. Great to be here in your hearts.
And in your studio that you record in as well.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Because often you do these sort of remotely, don't you? Not face-to-face every time?
Yeah, sometimes it's easier over Zoom to have people listen to the music if this available. Sometimes I'll just sit face-to-face in a room with someone. It's weird. It's so much weirder. Hey, I know you like music. I think very early on in our, like when we got to know each other, we kind of discussed music, and you seem like a kid who liked music. What were you listening to when you were, say, 13, 14?
13, 14, very much a punk rock phase.
Nice.
Sort of like that California punk rock.
Yep, so we're talking, so is it the pop punk or old punk? So Descendants, Rancid, all that kind of stuff? Yep. Or are we talking like Good Charlotte?
No, more the Descendants, Rancid stuff. I didn't hate Good Charlotte, but yeah, I was very much into like NoFX, Strung Out, Pennywise.
Nice.
Those sort of bands. And I still like them, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. I listen to a lot of that stuff at the gym. That's normally when I listen to music these days, when I'm driving at the gym. And so if I'm at the gym, I listen to a band called Diary of Planet a lot.
Diary of Planet?
Yeah, they're kind of like a metal band. They're lots of fun. But
it's the best title.
Sometimes I just get in the car and my Spotify just happens to be playing the last thing I played, and my kids are 8 and 11, and so Diary of Planet's song Ghost with a Boner just came on one day. They loved it. It's a great song. And it's right in their wheelhouse. So sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, because my kids like punk. My eldest likes indie rock. That's what he says. And my youngest is into metal and punk. Yeah.
Awesome.
You kind of, but also he's only 8. And I'm like, all right, you got to start listening to the actual nice songs.
Not right,
just
okay.
This kind of angry man yelling. Like, he loves Slipknot. It's like, yeah.
Really? And is it the kind of thing that the masks attracted him?
I think what it was is that Stranger Things was popular.
Yep.
Not that he's watched it, but he's watched enough stuff on YouTube that, yeah, Stranger Things is cool. And so Metallica was at the end of that with Eddie playing the guitar, and so then he just went down the rabbit hole of going, all right, this is who I like now.
It's funny how you go down the rabbit hole. So when I was about maybe 7 or 8, I remember seeing The Prodigy.
Yeah.
And just Keith Flint's like spiky hair. He had such an amazing look.
Yep.
That sort of just really sucked me in.
Yeah.
And then I became really into The Prodigy, like as an 8-year-old, and then I was into all those big beat bands like Chemical Brothers and Fatboy Slim, but mostly I got sucked in by the hair.
We're going to talk about a band who are very influential to my teen years coming up later, and most of it was because of the hair.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah.
So we're doing volume 15, side A, the year's 1995, okay? So you're what, 5 years old?
5 years old. I'm yet to discover Keith Flint and The Prodigy.
I'm 14 years old. So all this kind of stuff is like absolute wheelhouse when you're kind of going, who am I as a person?
Yeah.
What am I attracted to? What do I want to become? These songs, some of these songs are very, very influential in what became the Josh Earle that is before you right
great.
Now.
Yeah, great. This is our peak you.
All right. The first one. No.
Is this peak you? Sure. The shape of Josh to come.
But it is a great way to kick off an album. This is the Welsh Elvis, Mr. Tom Jones, and his song, If I Only Knew. That's a voice.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
I'm only getting every second word, but I'm loving
yeah.
it.
Here's the chorus. If I only knew what I could do to make you love me, to make you love me. If I only knew what I could do make you love me, to make you love me. What do you think, Dave Warnke?
Oh, I'm loving it.
It's great, isn't it?
It's so good. It's so much energy. The verses do sound like someone has just handed him the lyrics and he's gone, all right, let's give it a crack, one shot.
It's amazing. So this was kind of a bit of a resurgence for Tom. Like he'd always been, ever since the 60s, kind of making music in like the public sphere. But then in the 80s, he tried to be a country music singer.
Right.
Yeah. And I guess it's that thing of like, you know, he was aging out of the pop and rock world. So yeah. where are the fans? I'll go country fans. And he's got the voice.
Like yeah,
he's got
for
such
sure.
a good voice. But then this is the story of this song. So in 89, he had a hit with a cover of Prince's Kiss. And then he kind of came back into vogue because he was on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Really?
Yeah. So you know the character Carlton?
Yeah.
Loved Tom Jones. Used to dance It's Not Unusual all the time. And so Tom Jones made a cameo. And he also made a cameo on an episode of The Simpsons, the episode Marge Gets a Job.
That's right. Yeah. He's kidnapped by Mr. Burns.
Yeah, so that's in 92. Or by Smithers, yeah. So 89 had Kiss, 92. So he's getting back. And then he did a gig. He did a charity performance with Sting for his Rainforest Foundation in Carnegie Hall. And it was super successful. And Tom Jones says, and I went very well. Then Jimmy Iovine, a music producer and label boss, called him up and said he'd heard about a performance and wanted him to sign to Interscope Records. So he did. And Jimmy had the song If I Only Knew because there was a band called Rise Robots Rise. They released this song in 92. They were an obscure band. Do you want to hear
it? They released this song.
This song. This is their song. I'll play you their song. This is their version of it.
Interesting. Good name.
So this is real kind of like 92 kind of white man rapping, but also the mix of, hey, we're really good guitarists, so there's going to be guitar yeah. breaks.
Oh,
yeah. I'll go forward to the rapping part. Here we go.
Which Tom does have a crack at for a little yeah. bit, doesn't he?
There. So that was wow. their version.
So different.
Yeah. So Trevor Horn was producing the Tom Jones version. Now Trevor Horn was from the band The Buggles, Video Killed the Radio Star.
Oh, okay, yes.
Also went and became a big time producer, so many hits. And he liked the chorus, didn't like the melody of the verses. So he wanted to hire Lowell Cream from the band 10cc. Great name.
I didn't know that was the 10cc person's name.
Lowell Cream.
Lowell Cream.
But Tom Jones said, no, let me have a crack. I'll have a crack at it. And just looked at the lyrics and then came up with it in his head.
He did just yeah. have a go.
Yeah, just had a go. So when you
sounds
said,
like that, but I love it.
And he said he should have a writing credit, but he didn't because he felt bad because Rise Robots Rise were a struggling band and he didn't have the heart to take the royalties off
right.
them.
Right. He's like, I'm already a millionaire.
Yeah, I'm already doing all right. So good man, Tom Jones.
Oh, I'm so stoked to hear that.
In some respect.
Okay.
Okay. In other respects,
no.
Not so great. You know, no, but we don't know. We don't know. Okay. So Tom Jones, very sexy man.
Yes, but I mean, isn't he in his 70s and women still throw underwear on the stage at
yes.
him, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Married his high school girlfriend.
Mr. Jones.
They had a child together when they were both 16. They were married right up until 2016 when she, unfortunately, she passed away. She had a battle with cancer, passed away. But just because he was married for so many years did not stop him being a renowned pants man. So he said at the peak of his fame,
so he's going to put a number on it?
250 groupers a year, he said.
A year.
A year. He had well-known affairs with Mary Wilson from The Supremes, TV host Charlotte Laws, and a former Miss World by the name of Marjorie Wallace. He also had a son with one of these women, but he refused to acknowledge it, even though there was a DNA test that proved that it was. And apparently the son is not doing well. The son's homeless now, and Tom Jones still does not acknowledge it.
Okay, well, Tom, we've been on a roller coaster tour. Yes. I was thinking you were great for a second there.
So this is from his 32nd album.
So I couldn't. So, like, you know, I had to listen to it on Spotify. The album cover comes up. It is a wild cover.
Yeah, he's wearing like a netted singlet with some like, high-waisted pale baby blue pants.
And he's like screaming. He looks like he's, you know, ah! And then in the background there is a scantily clad woman in sort of silver attire. And I'm like, it's called The Lead and How to Swing It. I'll look into the album. He's got so many albums that there's not even a Wikipedia page for most of them.
I know.
There's too many.
He was releasing in the like 60s 4 albums a year, but it was all covers. Like get in the studio, was record some songs. Yep, there we go. So this is Tom Jones, introducing Tom Jones, The Night with Tom Jones, all these just getting them out there. Wild time. Okay, but this got to number 1 in Finland.
Okay.
Yeah. Got to only 55 in Australia, 19 in the UK. So, you know, but still, there's so many albums out there.
There's so many. And I definitely knew this song. Like, I knew this one of the Tom Jones catalogue. Just a couple of weeks ago, Matt Stewart and I from Do Go On, we were doing some podcasts in the UK, and we decided we'd never been to Wales before.
Oh, yeah.
So we went for a detour. So we drove through Wales purposefully, and we put on a playlist of Welsh music. We put it together, and you better believe we kicked things off.
Tom Jones. Super Furry Animals. Did he have McCluskey or Future of the Left there?
We might have
Stereophonics.
Had Stereophonics was definitely on there, yes.
Charlotte Church.
Yep, and we had Catatonia.
Oh, yeah.
Which was great.
No, it was Space who sang the Ballad of Tom Jones. Catatonia sang Road Rage.
That's right, that was the track we had on
exactly.
there.
Exactly.
Good times, driving down,
good times,
down the highway.
Great music.
With Tom Jones.
All right, moving on. All right, this is a person, she's gonna come up a lot. Later on in this series. This is the first time she's been on the show, though. This is Sheryl Crow and her song, All I Wanna Do.
This ain't no disco. It ain't no country club either. This is LA.
can I just pause it here for a second? Now, there is an instrument in this song called the güiro.
The güiro.
The güiro.
Güiro, okay.
So it's like a percussion instrument and you scrape it and it sounds like a scraped like wooden thing. It's like sometimes it sounds like a bit of a frog.
Okay, yeah.
Listen out for it. Do you know the Saturday Night Live sketch, The Fear the Reaper with the more cowbell?
Yeah, yes.
That's what this is like. The entire song has this scrape and it might be, if you're wearing headphones, it'll be in your right side of your headphones. So have a listen for it.
Let's have a little fun before I die. Out of nowhere, apropos of nothing. He says his name is William. I'm sure he's Bill, or Billy, or Mac, or Buddy.
Is that just someone doing it over and over, or they just looped it?
I'm gonna say they did it over and over. Once you hear it, you can't unhear it.
No.
It ruins the song. I'm sorry, listeners.
That's all I'm listening to now.
Yes. That's all you can hear.
Still going.
All through. Now, I majorly hear the güiro, but that's all you could hear.
That's all I can hear now. And I'm wondering, like, if she does it live, is there a güiro player up the back?
Well, in the film clip, there's the band playing with her. There's no one on the güiro.
I hate that.
They've been silenced.
Finally. Yeah, just imagining someone doing it for 4 straight minutes.
I know.
You'd get really tired.
Do you know, everyone who goes to Gaulier, the clowning school,
oh, yes.
they always come back with, this is my sketch about, imagine being the insert musician on this song,
oh.
and they just have the little bit where they got to wait for it. Someone's got to do, imagine being the guiro player.
Yeah. First you got to explain what a guiro yeah. is.
Well, you'd have it. You'd have it yeah. there. This is the guiro.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah. So Sheryl Crow started off singing jingles for the likes of Toyota and McDonald's, and then... through sheer persistence, she became the backing singer for Michael Jackson on his Bad tour.
Right. And when you say persistence?
Wasn't meant to be there. Heard about...
just kept crawling onto the stage.
Heard about there being open or being auditions. They weren't open auditions, but she thought, well, I'm a singer and I've moved to LA and I want to be here.
Yeah.
So she just went in and went, oh, yeah, I don't know if you've got time, but this is who I am. And they liked her tenacity. And so she talks all about it on the Dana Carvey, David Spade podcast, Fly on the Wall. It's a very good podcast.
Right.
One of the podcasts in my rotations.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then so she got the gig from there and then...
Yep. And so from there, she was a backing singer for hire. So she's Michael Jackson, Stevie Wonder, Belinda Carlisle, Don Henley from the Eagles, just killing it
yeah.
in the backing vocal scene. Then 1992, recorded her first album with Sting's producer, Hugh Packman. So Sting's come up twice now.
Yeah, Sting. He yeah. was really had his finger all over the
fingers in some pies. But they didn't like it. They didn't really know what kind of singer she'd be. And so they just scrapped it. But you can find it. It's out there. If you're really a big Sheryl Crow fan, you can go into the Reddit and find
okay, some original stuff.
Yep. But in the meantime, she was her songs that she was writing were being recorded by people like Celine Dion, Tina Turner, and Winona Judd. So she's a... like, very well-paid musician. Like, she's doing very well.
But it is incredible that they're not sure what singer she's going to be. She's like, oh, I'm already writing hits. Just let me do them. I've got a great voice, obviously.
Yeah. So this song was from her debut album, Tuesday Night Music Club. And it was adapted. So the lyrics were adapted from a poem called Fun by a poet called Wynn Cooper. Okay. We'll talk about Wynn Cooper. So Wynn Cooper just wrote this poem. And the lyrics are pretty much just about his friend... Billy in the bar, and his friend tried to sue him once this song became a hit for royalties. Was not successful.
Right. Can you do that?
Well, I guess, like he said, he was the one who said, all I want to do is have a little fun before I die. Wynn Cooper took that, wrote a poem about it. It was a poem for 6 years and no one had done anything with it. Wynn Cooper had only released 500 copies of this book, and just someone in Sheryl Crow's band had bought the book and it was just in the studio. And so they thought, oh, let's write a song using this as the basis of it. And so Wynn Cooper got royalties, but Bill Ripley did not get any royalties.
Interesting.
Yeah. This was a big success. Peaked at number one in Australia for 1 week. It was tough. It was tough in 95 to try and get on the charts. There was a lot of boys to men clogging up the charts. Yeah. So, yeah, I'll Make Love to You was... on the charts for 6 weeks in America. So it couldn't get through.
So do you want to hear my controversial Sheryl Crow opinion?
Yes, please tell me.
That is a big James Bond fan. Love all the movies. Love all the theme songs. My favorite of all the theme songs is Sheryl Crow.
I don't think I've even heard the Sheryl Crow
Tomorrow
theme.
Never Dies, which is not a great movie. Okay. But the theme song
is that
so
is that a
good.
Pierce Bronson
Pierce
one?
Pierce Brosnan yeah. one, yeah. It's like...
It's not the one where he's surfing on that huge wave and then gets out of the water in a suit.
That could be the one after, which is also ridiculous.
That's the stupid. It's so stupid.
There's so many dumb moments. But yeah, I don't think many people would probably agree with me on that, but I just love her Tomorrow Never Dies.
Well, I really like her as well. I think she's got some really, really great songs, and there's a documentary series on her as well, and she's very, very interesting. And also, she dated Lance Armstrong for a while. Which
okay.
Is, yeah. Which
during, like, an era that he was...
Doping, yeah.
Winning and doping.
Yeah, yep. And so, it's a fascinating story, which she's going to come up later, and we'll tell it then.
Yeah, great. Bit of sizzle for a future Sheryl Crow.
All right, so, in the Earl household, we've talked about this. There weren't too many CDs, but this one was in the Earl household. This is REM, and from their Monster album, Monster, this is Bang and Blame.
Now, baby.
Great band.
Great band. Not one of their best songs.
No, it isn't, is it? But still, it's good. But they also reach excellent.
Yes. It is very good. And there are parts of this where I'm expecting him to start seeing That's Me in the Corner.
Yes, the no, no. Yeah. He likes to say no.
But it just shows you how big and how beloved this band was at the time. Because this is not one of their best. Not doesn't even make any of their best of compilations.
Yeah, I was going to say it wouldn't be on there, would
no,
it?
No, not on any of them. Still got to number 19 on the Billboard charts. The last time they also got number one on the modern rock charts. This was the song.
Okay.
So this is the second single. So the first single off the album was What's Freak from the Kenneth, which is more of a kind of poppy rock song.
Yep.
This one is quite a, you know, where they kind of went in their next album, which was New Adventures in the Hi-Fi. This kind of fits in that theme. But during the recording of this, this album as well was also nominated for a Grammy, but lost to Voodoo Lounge by the Rolling Stones.
Oh, right.
Even though I'm not a big fan of Monster as an album, it is 100 times better than that piece of shit by the Stones.
I don't even know that
it's
one.
It's so bad. Is it not, no. We played one of the tracks from it on a previous album with Andrew Levins, and it's just such a shit song, and that was the best song for anyway. Yeah. I like the Rolling Stones. It's just, sure.
I mean, when you have 600 albums.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So all these songs for Monster were written in a time of grief for Michael Stipe. So both Kurt Cobain and River Phoenix had died, and he was friends with both of them. River's sister's Rain is on the backing vocals for this song.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and some people allude that this is about River Phoenix, and they also allude that River Phoenix and Michael Stipe had a romance together, but nothing had been confirmed by either of them. And that, you know, you can go on all the song facts and Reddits about this song, and there's a lot of people saying that River Phoenix was struggling with his sexuality, and that's why he had a lot of substance abuse issues. But that's all hearsay on the Reddit
forums.
Okay,
sure, yeah. Yep.
Also, during recording of this album, the band just were fighting a lot, and Michael Stipe had an abscess in his tooth. And they had to postpone recording for a while because he had to get that removed. Have you ever had an abscess in your tooth?
No, but it sounds so awful.
I have, yeah. I had a root canal and I don't know, it must have got infected. And I woke up one morning and it just looked like, you know the kids from the Grinch film that are kind of puffy, yeah. Puffy mouth? I looked like that. It was so funny. Like my flatmate at the time was laughing at me. So I had to go out and get the back of my tooth drilled. And they would like have these kind of spikes that would go up and kind of like move the root and stuff like that. And that's what a root canal is. And
oh my
so
God.
I had the gap in the back of the tooth. So I had a hole in the back of my tooth. And then this was first week of my uni degree when I was doing teaching. I was in a lecture and all of a sudden that abscess just burst.
No, into your mouth.
Into my mouth. And so I was like swallowing it, but also dry retching and just had to leave. Because it was the first week, everyone thought, oh, he's hungover.
You're up the back.
Yeah.
Oh, was that one of the more disgusting experiences of your life?
So bad. Oh, it was so bad. Also, I should say that the band in this time broke up. They actually broke up, but didn't tell anyone. And I think, I've got it here. So situation came to a head when the group was recording at Louis's Clubhouse, which is Lit Home Studio in Los Angeles. And Stipe said, we broke up, we reached the point where none of us could speak to each other, and we were in a small room, and we just said, fuck off, and that was it. And then they met up a month later to resolve their issues, and then they said, we have to begin working as a unit again, which we haven't been doing very well lately. So people would come in with individual songs, and they go, okay. And so from that point on, they went, all right, we're going to record as a group, write as a group. And the next album was all written in sound checks on the road, because they were touring again, yeah.
Okay, but they were less successful from that point on.
Less successful, yes. I guess you go through waves. I think
of course.
Their album Up was very well received by critics, but I don't think it hit the heights of their Automatic for the People years. But you can't.
No one does.
Yeah, you can't. All right, moving on. Our first Australian act for this one. Now, I mean, I'm doing research. I'm obsessed with this person now.
Okay, because I don't know this artist. I would, like, you know, here I don't know the song, okay. But I've heard it before. Obviously,
so this is but. Max Sharam and her first ever single, Coma.
It is a good name.
Coma or Max Sharam?
Max Sharam.
It is a good name.
Yeah.
It's great. It's so 90s. That chorus is so 90s.
Yeah, that chorus just punches you in the face. Where did that come from?
Yeah, it's obviously like, you know, in the realm of your Tori Amoses and your Kate Bushes, all those kind of artists. But it's great because it's Australian. So this is her first single. It first aired when she was a contestant on the show New Faces, hosted by Bert Newton.
Okay. And that's when she performed it.
She performed it there as a contestant. Oh. Okay. But she'd been on talent shows before. She went on Red Faces as a comedian.
Really?
So she started as a musical comedian. Well, she actually started opera, and then we're going to talk about her on December 18 at the European Beer Cafe at the live show.
Okay,
so
great.
I don't want to get into too much of it now. You'll hear it there, or you'll see it live because you'll get a ticket, everyone. But she did go on Red Faces as a stand-up where she was doing kind of parody songs and showing off her amazing range.
Does it still exist on YouTube?
You can watch it.
Fantastic.
She gets, this is the scores, so she gets an 8. Tommy Emmanuel, I think, is one of the judges. He gives her an 8 as well. And Red Simons, for those outside of Australia and too young to know, he was known as the mean judge. He'd always score very, very low. He gave her a 5 out of 10.
That's
which is
big for him.
Super high. Yeah.
Often, like, his job is to gong them off.
Yeah. Yeah,
like he's like, get out of here, that was terrible.
And say something mean about them.
Yeah,
okay.
But 5 out of 10.
Yeah, 5 out of 10. So she got 21 all up. So it's a pretty good score. Then when she went on New Faces, this is why she said she went on there. Because she said, I did the TV spot to make a statement. Because I thought it was fucking mad. All this mediocre stuff that goes on all over television. I thought, why doesn't anybody get up and represent my generation? The side of Australia that's so readily ignored. That compelled me to get on New Faces. And all the phones started ringing after that. I was very, very lucky. So soon after, like, the record label caught her up and it's like, we want to put out your stuff. This was a huge song on Triple J. Got to number 8 in the Hottest 100 of 94.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, great. And then she started singing as Max Sharam, The Sound of Sirens. That was her kind of banner that she had. Then she just shortened it to Max Sharam.
Max Sharam. Max Sharam, The Sound of Sirens.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But big fan. Big fan of Max Sharam.
Yeah, I really enjoy that. I did not know that song, but yeah.
She's living in New York now, and I've requested her friendship on Facebook.
Oh, okay. Any mutuals?
Yes, we do have a couple of mutuals.
Okay.
So I'm going to try.
That always helps.
Going to try and get her on the podcast. That's the thing. So Max Sharam, if you're listening, I want you on. I think you're great. All right, moving on to a band. One Hit Wonder gets branded about. This is a One Hit Wonder, this band, even though they're still performing, or one of the members of the band is still performing. As the band. This is Stiltskin and their song Inside. So 90s.
I know. Yeah.
Glass hour, you turn and cower, see it turn to dust, move on a stone dark night, we take to flight, snowfall turns to rust, seeming a fuse in mind like a nursing rhyme, fat man starts to fall, here in a hostile place, I hear your face, start to call, and if you think that I've been losing my way, that's because I'm slightly blinded. And if you think that I don't make too much sense, that's because I'm broken minded.
Okay. There we have it.
There we have it. So is that the live version?
No, that's a recorded version. It's not on Spotify, but on the 100% Hits, it wasn't the live version.
Right, because on Spotify it is the live version. It sounds very similar. I think that they...
Yeah, so Ray Wilson's the only... He's the front man. He's a singer. He's the only remaining member of the band. So the band, interesting story how they came to be. So musician Peter Lawler was asked to write a song for Levi's, the jeans.
Okay.
For a commercial. They wanted an original song, and he'd been working in writing like ads and stuff like that. And so he thought, all right, we'll get... So he's Scottish. He got this Ray Wilson. He knew him as a singer. Went, come join the band. And they released this song. And the song was such a hit that they went, all right, well, let's actually form a band.
And it's this song.
It's this song.
This was the Levi song.
This is the Levi song. So everyone knew the song before they go, what song is that? I love that song.
But they're like, we don't exist.
We're not a band. And so then they formed a band. And Ray is still traveling around touring off the back of this song.
Right. But he didn't write it.
He didn't write it, no. Peter Lawler wrote it, okay? All the instruments on this recording are Peter Lawler, except for the vocals. And then... Ray Wilson, after, because the band kind of broke up a bit, Ray Wilson went on to be the new singer of Genesis after Phil Collins left.
Really?
Yeah. And the introductory chorus, that the choir at the start, that's a group called the Ambrosian Singers. So this went to number one in the UK in 94, and it came the fourth song to top the list off the back of a Levi's ad. If you want your songs in the charts, really? Get on a Levi's ad. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know that Levi commercials are such tastemakers at the time?
And it's quite an interesting ad. So it's like these Amish girls, they're going washing their clothes by the river and they see a pair of jeans and then they look across in the lake and there's his hunk and they're like, oh, it's his jeans. And so they're waiting for him to get out of the water. And when he gets out, he's wearing jeans. And they look over and there's a fat bald bloke. It's his jeans.
That's funny.
Yeah. Quite funny. And so this is also used as, if you're in the UK, you'd know this, because it's used for Sky Sports. It was like the lead-in song between 98 and 2002.
Great.
Yeah.
So Lawler did very well off the back, right?
Lawler did very well, yeah. And Ray Wilson got a career off the back, yeah. Really.
Like and he was in Genesis. So was he just a touring sort of front man?
Yeah, when Phil Collins left to be just Phil Collins, yeah. Genesis was still a band, so, you know, they went, all right, let's play some songs as Genesis. Yeah. People still go and see him, yeah. All right, moving on. Actually, let's take a break. We'll come back after these messages.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we're back. All right. Now, you mentioned you like The Prodigy.
Yes.
I think this song might be in your wheelhouse then.
Yeah, don't we have that feel?
Because this is, they're called Bomb the Bass, and it's Bug Powder Dust.
I think it's time to discuss your philosophy of drug use as it relates to artistic endeavor.
And it goes on.
Yeah. And like all sort of big beat songs, it goes on for a long time.
Well, it's 4 minutes 20. That's how long it goes for. It's 4:20, man. Yeah.
4:20, cool. Hell yeah. But often those bands are like, it's like 6 minutes.
Well, that's the,
way too long.
Well, REM, all their singles were way too long. I did laugh. I didn't say this during Coma, the Max Sharam song. The end gets to 3:30, just fades out. They're like, we're going to make this for radio. Because that's apparently that's the perfect number for radio, 3:30.
Right, okay.
Yeah, make a song that long, radio stations will play it. Say radio in it, they'll play it.
Yeah, they
love
play
that.
It twice.
Hey,
yeah.
That's us. Yeah. So this is English musician, producer, Tim Simonon. Simonon? S-I-M-E-N-O-N. Would you say Simonon? Simonon.
Simonon, which is similar to the bass player from The Clash, but he's O-N-O-N, I believe.
Yeah.
Which is Simonon. So yeah, it's probably similar to that, yeah.
Got to number 24 in the UK charts. And Select magazine, which is like the dance hip-hop magazine over there, said it was Song of the Year of 95.
Song of the Year?
This was Song of the Year, yeah. It's so that era. This song, yep. It's just like people taking ecstasy, having fun.
Yep,
like,
yeah, for sure.
Do you like this song?
I really like the music.
Yeah.
Not, the vocals are okay, I find.
Yeah. The vocals do date it, yeah.
Yeah, they date it a bit, which I think that some of the other sort of bands of this era with that sound probably don't have that sort of rappy sort of bit that dates it as much.
I think dance music at this time was very progressive and showing where music can go to more so than any of the rock stuff and the pop stuff that was happening at the time. Yeah, it's interesting. So the lyrics are a reference to William S. Burroughs' novel Naked Lunch. Have you read Naked Lunch?
No, I haven't. No.
Have you read Junkie?
I have read Junkie.
So have I. Yeah, I've not read Naked Lunch. Yeah.
I know, which is like the super controversial one.
Yeah, I've seen Naked Lunch because they've made it into a film, but I never read it. When I was in high school, we used to cover our books, like put pictures and put contact over it.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yep.
I don't know. I don't think they still do that. Kids, they're cool.
That was a whole industry.
Yeah, it was amazing. But when I was in Year 12, I studied literature, and I would collect Juice magazine. And they had, because William S. Burroughs had just died, and so they had a tribute to him. And so I had that on my literature. Had never read it. I'd never read any of him. Just trying to get in with my teacher.
Sounds like something I would have done too.
So the singles. This was released as a single. Had a few remixes on it, on the singles. And one of the remixes was by a band called The Dust Brothers.
Oh, yes.
And also another one by The Chemical Brothers, who ironically... Their original name.
I thought that you were going to... That's their original name, is it?
Yeah, the Dust Brothers.
Yeah, but it's two different... Because I know they had to change their name, right?
Yeah.
And that's why their album's called Exit Planet Dust.
Yep, that's exactly it.
But so, but they both remixed.
They both remixed. So they're obviously moving in the same circles at this point in their career.
Amazing.
I wonder if the Chemical... I think the Chemical Brothers is a better name than the Dust Brothers.
Yes, me too, actually, yeah.
But see, because I remember the Dust Brothers, they were the music consultants or they did the soundtrack for Fight Club.
Oh, okay.
Because I'd read about how the Chemical Brothers were called the Dust Brothers, and I'd never heard of the Dust Brothers. Yep. And then I saw Fight Club. I went, oh, maybe they're just doing soundtrack stuff now. But I don't know.
Oh, thank you. Because I also don't know any of their music. It would be funny to be the band that you were like, no, you've got to change your name. And then they change it, become huge. Yeah. Absolutely massive.
All right. Look, I like this song. I'm going to go out on
Yeah, I think it's I like the vibe of it, absolutely. And some of the lyrics do make me laugh. Have you looked into all of them?
No.
Never a phony, I've got more flavour than a packet of macaroni.
I did hear that, yeah.
I enjoy that. I had to write that down.
He had to put packet too, because it doesn't sound like it's out of the meter as well. Like,
yeah, it doesn't quite fit.
Because macaroni on its own does not taste, it's just bland pasta.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've got to say packet macaroni.
Yeah,
so you're thinking,
of macaroni.
Because otherwise you go cheese and macaroni.
Yeah.
But it's macaroni and cheese.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Now, this is the song when I talk about Hair got me into a band. This is the band. This is Green Day. And the first song of theirs I ever heard.
Okay.
This is When I Come Around.
Crying loud, all the way across town. She's been searching for that someone, and it's me out of the crowd. As you sit around
You would have been a Green Day fan.
Love it. Absolutely. Hook, line, and sinker.
I didn't want to say at the start when you said, oh, the like the West Coast punk scene. Yeah. I thought, oh, this is totally what you're into.
So good. It's so, so good. Yeah, definitely had... my older sister was also into that sort of style of music. So we had this album and the follow-up Nimrod and then even American Idiot on high rotation in our three-disc player and the CD player.
So I remember loving this album. Nimrod going, oh, okay. I did like, is that, I think that's got Time of Your Life on it. Or is that on another one?
Yes, no, it is. It's right at the end.
Yeah, yep. I think that was kicking around when I was leaving high school, I think.
Yeah, yeah, because it's funny because that song has like a big, you know, pop culture sort of thing, but I think the album sort of bombed for them.
Yeah. And then I think by the time American Idiot came out, I was like, this is kids' music.
Yeah, for sure. Because it feels like very, you know, quite a reinvention, but there's less than a decade between this and American Idiot. And then the fact that they're only like 50 years old now.
I know.
It's amazing.
I know. So this film clip was really influential to me. And so there's two film clips. There's one which is a proper film clip. It's set in like someone's kind of looking in windows at an apartment and there's different stories going on in each window. And the other one, which is the one I knew, was filmed live at Woodstock 94. So Woodstock, the 25th anniversary of the original Woodstock, they had it in 94. It wasn't the one in 99 that they've had two documentaries about.
And a Do Go On episode recently too. Yeah.
But this is the 94 one, which Sheryl Crow played at as well. And there's a whole bunch of bands who played at both 94 and 99. And they said 99 was a bit different vibe.
Yep.
But 94 was a huge, big mud pit. And the film clip...
Oh, yes, I've seen that.
Yeah, is people throwing mud at Green Day. And other bands walked off and Green Day almost like incited it, going, come on, give us more. And so you can see Billy Joe Armstrong's guitar just covered in mud.
I was going to say the guitar is covered. Like, how is it still making noise? Yeah. How has he still got his fingers on it?
But that, and see, he had green hair in that film clip and I dyed my hair green when I was in year 11. And so I bleached it first, then dyed it green.
And did you do it fully yourself? Did you have any help?
I had it bleached professionally.
Yep.
And then there was this thing called the brand was called Fudge and you could put fudge in. And look, our school did a production of Godspell and they said, oh, you can put little strips in your hair or something like that, just, you know, in the choir. And I went, that's all I need.
It's an open invitation. Yeah. Here we go.
You've given me an inch. And I bleached, and because I still worked at the supermarket and they said, you can't have green hair and work at the supermarket. I said, it's for my school play. I've got to have it.
Yeah, sorry, I'm in a production. Yeah. You understand.
And they said, all right, when's the play? And I said, okay, it's in 2 weeks' time. And said, okay, as soon as the play's finished, you've got to change it back. And it didn't come out. Like, I tried to wash it out. It was six washes and it goes out again. And it just didn't.
It stayed.
I had to grow it out. So I had green, like, my hair's brown and then it had green, like, tips at the very end. For a while.
And then did the supermarket furious?
No, they were fine.
Well, they got over it by that point.
Yeah, they were like, you're turning up to your shift. But yeah, so it made me at like 13, 14 watching this go, I want to go to a music festival. That's all like music. I thought that's where the fun is. And now at 41, I'm like, I do not want to go to any music. I've been to so many that I'm like, I know they're not as fun as just going back home to your own bed.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny, like months ago, I booked tickets to the... What's it called? Good Times? There's one on Friday with Tism and NOFX playing it.
Oh, okay, yep.
Very excited a few months ago. But now it's coming up closer. I'm like, oh, looking at the weather going, oh, probably going to get sunburnt. Oh, how am I going to stay hydrated? Oh,
I remember in, I think it was 2011 or so, I got booked for all three. At the time, it was only three Falls Festivals. So the Marion Bay one, the Lawn one, and then the one over in Margaret River. And the National were playing. So I thought, oh, yeah, I want to go to all three of them.
Yeah, great.
And my manager was like, you sure you want to go to all three? I'm like, yeah, put me on three. And so they flew me to the Margaret River one 3 days before I needed to be there. Like, the festival, I was on the last day, but they said, oh, Josh wants to see the National, so they're on the first day. So, but when I got there, because I said, yeah, I'll stay on site. And they said, yeah, we'll provide you with what they called glamping, like a glamour camping thing. And when I got there, they went, no, we don't have any tent for you. And I was like, what? I've got a...
So that means you haven't brought anything because you expected to be put up.
I was expected to have, like they said, in the glamping one, they provide all the bedding and the tent. So I'm like, I've got... So they ended up finding me a tent. And I was like, this is... And so I'm trying to call my manager, but with my reception was pretty bad. It was also New Year's Day as well, because we had the one in Lawn on New Year's Eve, and then I flew the next day, got there. And then they finally found me one. But then the next day, Sam Simmons from he was working at Triple J at the time. Same thing for him. They didn't have him a tent. And so he went up to the organizers and went, "Hey, I'm the only person at this festival representing Triple J. We're your major sponsors. How do you reckon they're going to go when I go back to work next week and they say, how was the festival?" I said, "They didn't get me a tent." Do you reckon they're going to? And so we had tents found magically for the next two nights. So we were, here's tents for you. Here's bedding. And it's like, yeah. So I had one night with no bedding, just on the floor in a tent. It was fine. It was Margaret River in summer.
Like, yeah, sure.
But yeah. Love a festival.
But you saw the National 3 times in a week?
I saw them 4 times because I also had tickets to their sideshow at the Palais, which is great as well.
Yeah, they are great.
They were very good. But I did notice they did the same thing every time he, like for Mr. November, he gets in the audience and goes around. And it was great.
With the long lead?
Long lead.
And there's a roadie sort of trying to feed it to him on a hook. Oh, what a nightmare gig.
Well, that was the thing. So also many years ago at the Big Day Out, I saw Andrew and Ellis by the Trail of Dead. And I went and saw their sideshow, and the sideshow was first. And they, on their last song, the roadie came out and handed them all new guitars, and those guitars got smashed.
Oh!
And I thought, oh, they're the shit guitars. And then at their Big Day Out, maybe it wasn't Big Day Out, maybe it was Livid Festival, they came out, and the last song, these new guitars were put on, and they smashed them as well. And I'm like, oh, that's a trick. Yeah, you got shitty old guitars you're smashing.
You're smashing a Samick or something. Yeah.
All right, moving on. This is a song. We've talked about the people who wrote this song on Pod Machine, the Patreon podcast, but that was under a different name. That was under the name Dupe.
What a name.
Dupe. Now, this is Hocus Pocus, their other name, and their song, which was huge only in Australia. Here's Johnny.
This time, it's war. Here's Johnny.
I think they had me until this part.
It's intense.
It's too much.
There we go. I just had to get to that bit.
It feels like almost a parody of that whole genre. They've got all the bits together and they just sort of link them up one after another. There's the weird sound effect at the start, the sample, the bit in your face, and then the...
Yeah. That famous sample, so from The Shining, and then it's like, yeah, then we'll just have that weird let the beats drop go like this or whatever. Anyway, this was number one in Australia for 6 weeks.
6 weeks? You said it was a competitive time as well.
6 weeks. It got to, like, so it ended the charts. Then it got to number two for 3 weeks. And then it got to number one for six. So for 9 weeks of Australia in 95, you turn on Rage and this song would be right at the top there.
Right. Amazing.
Didn't get played on radio.
It didn't get played on radio.
Triple J played it, but that was it. No other commercial radio, no pop radio, even though it was number one song in the country.
Is that because they found part of it? Is it the vibe, or does they say something
offensive? It's like, you can't go from Tony Perrin and Diesel to... Yeah.
It's just so funny because it's like, this is obviously what the people want.
I know, but it was, got its only, like, people watched it on Rage and went, oh, what's this song? I love this song. Go into the record stores. And this, I know I talk about Rage a lot, people, but this is the power of it back then. It was, people would find a song they liked. This is a song that people may not have heard a song like this before. This might have been people's introduction to dance music.
Yeah. And did it have a great film clip as well? Did that help?
No, the film clip is like your laptop's gone to sleep and it's kind of like, and it's also kind of like just mouth with no skin and eyes with no skin just coming at you like float. It's like very kind of early animation.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. This was, though, the 14th highest selling single in Australia in 95.
Incredible, with no radio, real proper play on the commercial stuff. It's amazing.
Didn't do well anywhere else in the world.
And where are they from?
So they're Europe somewhere. Yeah, sure. I think it's German, but I don't hold me to that. It could be Scandinavian, but anyway.
Hocus Pocus. Or Dupe.
Dupe, yeah. So Dupe had their song, which sounds like it's a for every single cabaret burlesque performer doing hoops. That's what the Dupe song sounds like. All right, our last song. Here we go. This is a song we've talked about. No, we haven't talked about this band before. I got them mixed up with Ween for a bit because it's a similar vibe of weird kind of indie hit that made them go into the mainstream. This is the Flaming Lips and their song, She Don't Use Jelly.
She'll make you toast, but she don't use butter, and she don't use cheese, she don't use jelly.
What do you think, Dave?
I mean, I really like the Flaming Lips. Great band.
Had you heard this song before?
Yes. Yeah. I didn't even know if I knew it was them, though.
Yeah.
To be honest, I knew it was one of the sort of like 90s semi-comedy songs.
It's so weird. Yeah. So this was came out from their album Transmissions from the Satellite Heart in 93. Didn't get released until a year later as a single because it got picked up on Beavis and Butthead.
Okay.
They were making fun of it.
Yeah. Making fun of it being a weird song.
Yeah, just how they would.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, that song's funny. And then they released a single, got number 55 in the Billboard Hot 100 charts, top 30 in Australia.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Listening to it, do you think it's one of those things that someone used to write comedy songs? They've written the first verse. It's funny that Vaseline, what else can be weird? All right, a guy blows his nose. He uses magazines.
Magazines. What else rhymes with magazines? Yeah. Tangerines.
Yeah, tangerines. Oh, yeah. It's one of those things where you got the first verse. Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's very similar to Crash Test Dummies. Yeah. It's like three different little stories that were like, all right, here we go. We've got to fucking do this.
We've got to find another one.
Can we just repeat the first verse and the last verse? No, let's do another one. I will give them credit for this song, though. I like the guitar bit. That sounds very, very of the era as well. And the chorus is quite catchy as well. But Wayne Coyne, the lead singer, does what I thought was the impossible. He rhymes orange.
what does he rhyme it with?
Store. How the fuck? But he manages
Wayne, you've
it.
Done it again.
Yeah, because Americans say orange.
Store.
I know, buys from a store. She likes it real orange. About dyeing her hair.
Well done, he did it.
So not only were they on Beavis and Butthead, though, and I've talked about this in the past on previous shows, they were also on Beverly Hills 90210 playing at the Peach Pit after dark.
Oh, okay.
And there's a great line where Ian Ziering, his character Steve Sanders, he says, you know, I've never been a big fan of alternative music, but these guys rock the house.
Oh, wow. Exactly like people talk.
Yeah. I do like the Flaming Lips. I've seen them live a couple of times.
They're a notoriously good live act.
Fun,
right?
Live act. The only thing is, they only play like 7 songs in an hour. They just stretch them out so
much. Okay. Throw balloons and shit around.
Yeah, they get in balloons. They go in the audience. They get people... What they do is they walk around festivals before, or they don't, but they get someone to and go, hey, do you want to be in a suit and dance with the Flaming Lips? And of course, everyone does. And so everyone's dressed up in different costumes. They get on stage. It's big. There's confetti cannons going off everywhere. They're lots of fun. But this is in the set. goes for like 11 minutes.
Wow.
There's so much back and forth with the audience and like so much clapping. And it's fun, but by the end of it, you are exhausted like as an audience
member. Yeah, like, come on. How many things can rhyme with Vaseline Wayne?
Yeah. But here is a fact I didn't know about the band. So their album, Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots, released in 2002. Some people say it's their best album. I think they won before in 99, the Soft Bulletin.
Right, because that's the one I listened to the most of myself.
Yeah. Yep. That's got the big hits, the Do You Realize, and Yoshimi. The album was made into a show intended for Broadway. And at one point, Aaron Sorkin of the West Wing fame was on board to write it.
Okay.
Yeah. So it got performed in 2012 at San Diego's La Jolla Playhouse. And it had music from Yoshimi and the Soft Bulletin. And it also had the 2006 At War with the Mystics and that went out. It got positive reviews. People saying, if you're a fan of the band, you'll love this. So it really was the story of Yoshimi battling pink robots. And with their live show, big crazy stuff happening a lot. Like they, I don't think they were involved apart from their songs.
These are the songs. This is sort of the story or whatever. And then...
Playbill, which is the Broadway kind of magazine kind of thing, reported that plans were in the works for it to be on Broadway, and then nothing has happened since.
It's just gone dead. No one talks about it.
So I want to know.
What happened?
I want to see the script for it as well. What the story is.
Yeah.
And yeah, I want to know what happened, why people pulled the pin.
Do you think that Aaron Sorkin was just a big fan of the band and was like, yeah, I'll do that?
Must be. Give me a look at the songs and I'll see what I can do with with the script.
With the story.
A lot of walking and talking in big balloons.
Yeah, walking around the stage.
All right, so that's our album. That's side A of volume 15. Now, let's go through. We do this every time. Let's go through and say if they're a hit or not a hit, Dave.
Now, when you say hit, do you mean a hit in my heart or a hit like undeniable hit on the radio style hit?
A bit of both. I don't mind.
A bit of both. Okay.
I'm happy.
Because I feel like it's a slightly different list.
It's let's say Dave Warnke hits.
Okay, but hits for me, absolutely. Okay.
So let's go through. So Tom Jones, If I Only Knew, hit.
Such a hit.
All I Want to Do, Sheryl Crow, hit.
Big hit.
Bang and Blame, R.E.M.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a hit because I like the band.
Okay.
I'm feeling positive.
All right. Coma by Mac Sharam.
Yep, loved it.
Hit. Stiltskin, Inside.
Oh, I do like the song.
Yeah, it's a good song.
I really like the song. Yeah, I'm going to give it a hit.
All right. Bug Powder Dust by Bomb the Bass.
No.
No, okay.
Not for me, sorry.
When I Come Around, Green Day.
100%.
100% hits. Yeah,
he's hitting onto me.
He said the name of the show. Here's Johnny by Hocus Pocus.
Sorry, Hocus Pocus. I mean, you were number one for 6 weeks. I can't take that away from
it's
you.
It's so funny. That is, of all these songs, the only big hit. And you were gone.
And I'm gone. Sorry, does not align.
She Don't Use Jelly by The Flaming Lips.
It's fine. I'm going to give it a hit.
7 out of 9. I think that might be one of the highest scores we've had.
Pretty good.
I think this is a very good side. Okay. Yeah,
would you have said that most are hits?
I would have given, I reckon I would have had 7 out of 10 as well. I wouldn't have had Bang and Blame, but I would have had Here's Johnny.
Okay, great. You can swap that over.
Much the same, yeah. And only Here's Johnny because I remember it as a child being on all the time.
Yeah, just for sure. Yeah, I feel like if I'd had that connection to it, if I'd heard it before, it was just kind of bizarre now.
Yes, it is. Hey, thank you so much for doing this. Where can people hear more of Dave Warnke?
They can hear me every week on the Do Go On podcast, which is a sort of comedy history sort of thing with Jess Perkins and Matt Stewart, who you've had on before.
Yep.
And then also every second week on Book Cheat, which is a book club podcast where I've read the book, so you don't have to. We talk about classic books you've been on for Wuthering Heights.
Yeah.
We talked about Of Mice and Men. That's the kind of stuff where things that you want to get around to reading. You want to know the gist of it, but I'll tell you about it. And then we just sort of crack jokes about the plot over the...
Naked Lunch could become...
Do you want to do it?
Yeah, let's do Naked Lunch.
Okay, let's do it. I'll put it on the list. I'll get you in.
Hey, listeners of this show, if you're in Melbourne, come along to the live show December 18 at the European Beer Cafe. We have Geraldine Quinn, Gillian Cosgrove, Jordan Barr, Hot Department, Oliver Clark, all performing songs from Volume 17.
That's awesome.
It's going to be great. And we also have Justin Hamilton and Jess McGuire are going to be my brains trust there. We're going to be talking about the songs. It's going to be fun. So it's 3 p.m. on December 18. Tickets at joshell.com.au. All the money, all the proceeds go to the Indigenous Literacy Foundation. So not only are you going to see a good show, you're also going to help out some kids in need. That's all I need to say. Oh, I do also need to say thank you, everyone, on the Patreon. There's a whole bunch of stuff coming up on the Patreon. And also, you would have heard Sydney's Don't You Know Who I Am that we recorded last weekend, so it was lots of fun as well. So thanks everyone who came out to that show. That's all I need to say. Thank you so much. See you next time. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.